Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledger. He's Trevor Sikkema, both of us from thedraftnetwork.com. And it feels like, Trevor, we are in draft season officially for everybody in some ways now because underclassmen declarations have begun. They're taking off. Well, I know we had the injury, Nick Bosa one, and Ed Oliver declaring right after the draft.
Ed Oliver basically declaring as an eighth grader.
Right. I mean, like, that's those guys don't barely even count to me. But, like, now we've got, you know, in the Rodney Anderson injury too, but now we've got DK Metcalf over the weekend saying that he's declaring for the draft. Now, as of yesterday, N'Keal Harry, the wide receiver from Arizona State, Rashawn Gary, the edge defender slash interior defensive lineman from Michigan, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson from the University of Florida.
I understand that, like, the regular season's over, but I really didn't think that all these guys would come out on Monday the way that they did. Not that there were even a ton of them. It was kind of just Harry, Rashawn Gary, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, but I just, like, it seemed like throughout the day on the Draft Network, we were pumping stuff out and we were updating our little list of the guys who were declaring. And I just felt like we did it more than I thought we were going to. I didn't realize that this Monday was going to be such a big deal for a lot of these draft prospects. I thought we were going to wait a little bit, but these guys are getting right to the punch, I guess.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. And we're running a tracker over at thedraftnetwork.com. And so we're always just kind of on our toes this time of year, but you're right. I thought maybe, like, guys whose seasons were, like, over, like, none of these guys really. I mean, like, I thought, you know, some of the guys who, you know, Arizona State's getting, they got a bowl coming up, you know, and Harry's probably not going to play in it. And
did he say he was going to play in it? I thought that he wasn't going to play in it.
Yeah, I'm sure he will not play in it. So, you know, maybe that was the reason for him, but yeah, I mean, Gary, I'm sure he won't play in it either. He's kind of not. He's been kind of in and out of the lineup, kind of hurt, whatever. I don't know, whatever the situation is. This season anyway. So, you know, it was a little bit strange to see some of those guys jumping the gun and kind of coming out and saying it. But I mean, I'm happy about it because it gives us something to talk about on the show. And we've talked about Bosa and Oliver and Rodney Anderson already on the podcast. So let's start with DK Metcalf, and it'll probably easily transition in N'Keal Harry. This guy's wide receiver one for me. He's wide receiver one for you. Obviously, formal evaluations will still get underway. I really like Riley Ridley. I really like Deebo Samuel. I like some other guys. I'm not saying for sure DK Metcalf's going to be my wide receiver one. I would be a little surprised if anybody passed him up in the formal grading process, especially because I just mentioned all SEC wide receivers, and I've watched the SEC all season long. So one of those guys would basically have to pass him up, and I've already seen a good bit of him. It would basically have to be on the basis of athletic testing, and I think Metcalf does well there. To me, the Metcalf move, in terms of what you are on the field, I don't know that he was going to get a ton better at Ole Miss. So as a redshirt sophomore, making that jump, your size, your speed, your hands, your contested catchability outside your frame, you know, just a monster type of skill set, I'm pumped he's taking that to the NFL. Does he have holes in his game that need to be developed so he can maximize his potential at the NFL level? Yes, absolutely. But Ole Miss is only going to ask him to run so many routes in that offense. That wasn't going to change. If he's going to become a more well-rounded player, it had to be in the NFL, and he's making that leap. And I personally think he has all the traits and the intangibles. You know, from everything I've heard, he's a great kid who works extremely hard. So, you know, as long as that part checks out in the process, I think you feel really comfortable about projecting him to reach his ceiling.
Yeah, and, you know, these decisions are obviously the kids' decisions to have. We see that guys sometimes go back to school when, you know, we kind of look at their situation and be like, hey, man, you don't really have anything to benefit here. You might as well go pro. But some of them just enjoy, I don't know, maybe finishing what they start or staying with a team, finishing something out there with a coaching staff or with a certain group of players or whatever it is. But certainly when you look at DK Metcalf, even in the, I mean, it's fair to call it a limited sample, not that it's like barren, like we don't have a ton of like tape on him, but he is just a redshirt sophomore. He was really just getting into the swing of things this season, and then he obviously gets hurt. I think the most encouraging thing for me here is that this hopefully means that the neck injury that he had is not as serious as it once was or threatened to be, right? Because if it was as serious as that, you're really putting your draft stock in serious jeopardy. Even if you say to yourself, okay, I know what kind of talent I have. I'll go to the NFL. I'll get the NFL's doctors. I'll get in an NFL camp, and like they'll be the ones to help me get right. If you fail that physical at the combine, that's your stock. Bad.
Yeah, yeah.
That's bad, especially for a neck injury. So I've got to think that this is only a declaration because of that his neck is going to be at least in pretty good shape by the time the combine runs around. I don't even know if he's going to necessarily work out at the combine. I don't know if he'll even work out at a pro day. Who knows? But as long as he can go to the combine, they can do the medicals on him, and they can say, hey, your neck will be fine by, let's just say, like training camp. Like, we'll be able to get you on the field. I think that's huge for DK Metcalf, because certainly you touched on it there. The skill sets are all there for him. And if you're going to go to a place where you're filling a guy's holes in his game, the NFL is the place to do that, right? You don't want to necessarily have to learn at Ole Miss and then relearn at the NFL or something. You don't just want to waste years. If you are where you are physically, if you're near your peak in a lot of different areas there, just go. Just figure it out. Figure it out when you get to the NFL and, you know, start making some money when you can. So I think that's absolutely, I think it's a good move for Metcalf.
Right. Wasn't a lot to be gained by going back, and multiple reasons, you know, with Tiamu moving on and the AJ Brown's moving on, DeMarcus Lodge moving on. Dane Brugler saying the other day that he'd be pretty surprised if Dawson Knox went back to school. So it seems like the whole crew's kind of heading to the NFL. And for Metcalf, obviously that makes sense. But hopefully that didn't push him into a hasty decision with his neck. I'm not saying it did. I'm not trying to imply anything. I'm just saying that hopefully everything's taken care of there. You know, I see him on IG. You know, it seems weird, but like I see him on Instagram. He seemed like he's moving around totally fine. Like, I mean, he's not like running sprints or anything, but like there's nothing on his neck, you know. So, you know, take that for what it is, obviously, but it sure seems like things have been a quick recovery for him.
Which is
so
good,
far.
Which is very good. Very good news.
Absolutely. I mean, and you think about him not, you know, being rolled out for the rest of the season. Well, you know, the bowl was going to be inconsequential at that point. So really all that meant at the time was he was going to miss the next 5 or 6 games. You know, that's all that we know that meant. And I know some analysts out there kind of made it into maybe a bigger thing. And I don't know that it was ever any grounds to that. So a good sign for Metcalf, obviously, he's declaring. And Kill Harry joining this class is interesting because I think before the year, if you ask who's the more heralded wide receiver, who's a guy, you know, everybody expected in Kill Harry to declare after this year. But I think Metcalf is clearly kind of better in our minds. I'm not interested so much in distinguishing him at this point, but to you, when you watch N'Keal Harry, I know you've liked him. Why are you excited about this declaration, and do you feel like N'Keal Harry has a chance to be the first wide receiver off the board in this class?
Well, I mean, the reason why you get excited about a guy like N'Keal Harry is because he's the mold of what a Dez Bryant is, right? I'm not calling him Dez Bryant, but he's of that kind of type of alpha outside wide receiver who kind of has the same, you know, mental chip on his shoulder that Dez plays with. He's emotional sometimes.
Does
he can get aggressive. I think so.
I don't know if he plays with Dez's edge. I think he plays with competitive. So
that's fair. I think the Dez, I want to put it like this, because every time that I say a prospect's name with somebody, everybody just goes, oh, wow, Trevor just called him Dez Bryant.
Right. No, I hear you there.
Of the mold of Dez Bryant. Like, Dez Bryant would be N'Keal Harry's, like, ceiling. And I don't even think he's that athletic. Okay. So he's kind of the same that molded Dez is, but I don't think he's nearly as athletic. I still think he plays with a pretty decent chip on his shoulder. I really do. But
he's tough after the catch. That's one thing I really like about Harry. I think that translates to the NFL, you know.
Separation's a big deal, though, for him.
Oh, yeah,
because
for sure.
I don't see a lot of it. And that's dangerous because, okay, if you're aggressive to the catch point, if you're, again, like you said, really tough after the catch, if you act like an alpha personality, okay, that's good. I like that. You can make up for lack of separation if those things exist. That's why I like a guy like Kelvin Harmon. But that's also why I have a guy like Kelvin Harmon above N'Keal Harry, because I think that he separates better. I think he's more consistent when catching through traffic, and I think he's a little bit of the same thing when it comes to yards after the catch. So I think that he's a little bit of a step up from Harry in that regard, because I just don't know how athletic this guy is. So the combine is going to be really, really interesting for me for Harry, because I like a lot of the outside X receiver type of just wide receiver that he is, I think, mentally and his skill-wise, but you still have to be an athlete to play in the NFL. You have to, especially if you're going to be relied upon in this kind of role, because there's different types of wide receivers. if you have a certain skill set here and there, you can get moved around a little bit. But like if you are an X, like if you're a mold of like an X receiver, you basically have to be good at an X. Like there's not many other places that I can play you, because normally if you're not good at that role, it means that you're limited athletically somewhere, and I'm not going to play you somewhere else where you're limited athletically.
But you have to be able to win vertically too, and that's going to be the big question with it. You know, if you're tethered outside, you know, on the outside, and you're that's your spot, and you know you're not going anywhere, then you better be able to win in the vertical plane.
For sure.
You better be able to push off that line
and
sell vertically so you can get back open underneath. So that's the big question with me with Harry. Is he – I want to say I almost know he isn't super explosive off the line of scrimmage, but I want to see him – you know, if he runs a great 40, it's going to be huge for him, obviously. It's big for anybody, but especially for a guy like that, because you know a lot of the other things. I think it's that speed that's going to be the question. But still, you have to develop him as a route runner. I mean, he's not there yet as a route runner. You know, I think that's unquestionable. You know, when you look at his tape, and even what they ask him to do at Arizona State, he's clearly still developing in that way, you know, releases and things like that. So you're talking about taking somewhat of a raw skill set with Harry. I think there's no question about that. And when you're taking a guy with a raw skill set, you have to have a high ceiling if you're going to take a high pick on a guy like that. You're taking a guy that needs some development. We already mentioned Metcalf will need to learn some routes that he just doesn't even run at Ole Miss. All those releases are a lot better than Harry. But with Metcalf, this ceiling is massive, and you can see it on a game-to-game basis, like this huge ceiling if you can get him there. You have to basically see that with Harry, I think, to put him in that same plane of wide receiver, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of for all the reasons that you said there, I would have Harry, you know, I haven't redone my wide receiver rankings in a little bit here. It's been since the beginning of November. But, like, I would have Harry as wide receiver 6 or wide receiver 7. So, you know, if you're talking about being the first wide receiver taken, no way am I taking this guy first. Now, is he probably going to end up as, like, a top 50 pick? Yeah, probably, just because we know the league's looking after pass catchers and certainly guys who are going to be dominant on the outside. And if he has a good combine, if he has a good showing there, then you know a team's going to fall for him in that regard. But just kind of to go back to circle around your very initial question of where I think he might get drafted, he'd be wide receiver 6 or 7 for me right now. This class is just so loaded. There's just so many guys that I would take over him for different reasons.
Yeah, he'll be in that car. Right now, like I said, I like Metcalf and Ridley and Debo the most, especially Debo, like, you know, really returning to form lately over the last couple of weeks. But I do think after that, the door's kind of open, and I'm pretty open. Harry and A.J. Brown, I have some question marks about, and you know, some other guys as well. And so I do think the door's a little bit open after that. But definitely Harry is, I think, going to be one of the more polarizing conversations throughout draft season. Honestly, I think we got 3 polarizing players that declared today. I really do. And we're going to get to the other two here in a second. But first, folks, ever since we started this podcast, you know, you've been asking us for advice. We talk about it on Thursdays. We talk about who we're betting on. We don't always know who's going to win, but if you think you do, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why we always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust us, guys. They're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. Locked On is the promo code to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Locked On is the promo code when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid, and MyBookie will match the listener's first deposit 100% up to $1,000. We thank them for sponsoring today's podcast. Now, Trevor, when we look at this class, again, I think Rashawn Gary should bulk up and play on the inside as an interior defensive lineman. He has not been productive, nor has he had good tape playing on the edge at Michigan. Even when they cut him down this season, it just has not worked. He has not been a dynamic presence. I know he did get hurt early on in the year, so it did muddy things up. But, I mean, Chase Winovich was clearly more impactful than Rashawn Gary this season. I want to see him bulked up. I want to see him playing inside. They say he's going to kill the combine. He's obviously hanging his hat on that because it hasn't been there on tape this season. Honestly, it was really inconsistent last season. I know he's a 5-star and all this stuff, and there's this big billing at high school, but my dude, you got to have done it in college at some point. You know, people will get excited about it this time of year, but when by the time the draft rolls around, guess what? There's a lot of good-looking prospects, especially on the defensive line in this class, that have done more things than you on tape, and you've got to wow at the combine. That's where you got to sell yourself as a guy with upside. I'm willing to see him do that. I think he is explosive. I think he's quick. I think he's duck-footed. I know he's duck-footed. I've seen it. How he corners like that, that's going to be tough. I know that sounds weird.
Can you explain to the people, please, the scouting term that is duck-footed?
Yes, duck-footed. If you watch the All or Nothing on Michigan, watch Rashawn Gary when he walks, when he's just walking around anywhere. He walks with his feet pointed out to either side. So his toes are directly in line with his earlobes. If you made a line from his earlobes to the ground, instead of his toes being out in front of him, like down from his eyes, in other words. That's how he walks. That's how he stands. That's how he runs. So when you wonder why he can't corner, it's because he can't get his feet in line with the pocket. It's an issue. He's flexible in the hips, no doubt. That saves him a little bit. I don't think it's going to be enough off the edge in the NFL. He needs to be on somewhat of a more linear path. And I think that that's where he's had his most productive, to be honest, if you look at him at Michigan. That's where he made the most disruption. So I still have some hope for Gary. Do I think he's this top 10 prospect he was built at? Absolutely not. No way. But I do think that there's some excitement about him. If we're talking polarizing, I would say, Harry, I'm not sure how to feel about just yet. I need to really dig in him because I don't see a ton of Pac-12 in the season. Probably see less of it than any other conference. Gary, I know I'm not as high on him as his big pundits are, but I'm also not like totally out on him. But the combine's huge for him. Don't you agree that the combine, he has to kill it there, right?
Who, Gary?
Yeah.
Or Harry? Which one were you talking about?
Gary.
Okay, you broke up a little bit there. So Gary and Harry sounded like the same. So, he's an interior defensive lineman. Like this is, you can watch a couple of plays of his, and you can see him make flashes on the edge where like he'll rip by an offensive tackle, and he might look like he'll corner a quarterback, but it just does not happen nearly fast enough.
Well, you think every time he went off the edge in college, it was because he jumped the snap? I never saw him win.
Yeah,
like, he was jumping, and he got lucky.
The whole thing was that, like, if the flashes that he showed were truly, like, straight-up edge ability, we would have seen it more, okay? And I don't want to be this box score, like, scout. Like, that's never a good thing. You want context with everything, but production is still a real thing, especially if you're getting picked in, like, say, the top 15, which he's billed to do. You've got to have consistent production because you need to be beating college competition, because a lot of the guys you're going up against in college aren't going to make it to the NFL anyways. So if you can't necessarily make impacts, and I know there's a lot more that goes into it than stats, but like stats are often the final part of it. Like, right, if you get the sack, if you get the tackle for loss, you're the guy who's finishing. You finish the play. That means you got to the ball quick enough to finish the play, okay? It's not the be-all, end-all, but it's something to take in consideration. Right now, 5.5 sacks his sophomore year is the most that Gary's ever had. He had 3.5 this year. You know, and I understand he only played in 9 games. He was hurt. I get it. But every time I've ever watched Gary, I'm like, this is clearly an interior defensive lineman who could thrive on the inside. Thrive. There are times when he blows up the snap because he is so fast off of it. He's 6'5", 280, 285, whatever he is right now. Throw a couple more pounds on him, and he's still got the size, and he'll still have the explosiveness to be a force in the middle. I would love Rashawn Gary in the middle. But right now, he's just – now – I don't blame him. Edge players get drafted higher. Edge players get paid more. So he wants to be an edge. Okay, great. I get it.
Get paid more if you're good, but, though.
Well, that's, you know, that's the other part of it here. You know, Gary has got it. When they get to the NFL, I think we're seeing creativity more and more on both sides of the ball. You're seeing, you know, using these gadget players in different ways in the run game and in the slot, and you're using the mismatched tight ends and all that stuff on the other side of the ball. And then on the defensive side of the ball, look at the Eagles last year and the way that they just attacked the pocket. Right. They looked so unorthodox at times, and they were throwing linebackers and interior D linemen and edge
Brandon
guys.
Graham was playing a three technique.
Like all over the place, and that's how you win. You got to get creative. I'd love to see Rashawn Gary in a defense that likes to get creative. Because there are a couple reps. Okay, sure. You want to put Gary. You want to put Gary at edge, or like as a five tech or whatever on a couple right. of plays. Okay, that's fine. We don't care about that. But like, shift him inside on some other ones. Use him as a mismatch piece. Because if you're playing, if you're a 4-3 defense that's just going to play traditional the whole time, and you've got Gary on the edge, he ain't going to do anything. He's not.
Yeah, versatile guys who play versatile guys with high ceilings. One of the scariest things in the draft world, because.
But if you,
you could be great right. at two positions.
Right, right.
But right now you are good at either. That's what that means, basically. And so it is a risk. He is going to be, again, like I
coaching,
said, Gary.
Coaching fit's going to be huge here, right. you know, yeah. where and, he goes.
And you've talked about that with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the other guy. You know, how big was the coaching change at Florida for him? I mean, his 2017 tape was laughable at times. I've never seen a player like you talk about Jerod Holyman. Remember Jerod Holyman? Holyman dipped out of tackles or like put his shoulder down. It was embarrassing because like he clearly didn't want to be physical. Gardner Johnson did some of that. He like ran away from some tackles to like make sure he was blocked so he couldn't be engaged with guys. But he also met dudes in the hole and got destroyed on a game by game basis. He missed guys. I mean, he missed tackles every single way you can possibly miss tackles. The Tennessee game last year was one of the, it probably wasn't funny to you, but it was humorous to me to watch that game and just, I mean, John Kelly killed him. Like I would have contemplated retirement after that game, but he came back this season. He definitely has his issues still as a tackler and some shake your head plays, but he is clearly a better football player this year. I think, and I said in my article today, I did have him listed on our mention or in that article. I think he was actually, one of my top five most improved players in the SEC this season because he went from unwatchable in times, not because of his traits, they were always good, but because, I mean, he just didn't play football when he was on the field. And this year, he was a difference maker for Florida.
Yeah, really interesting with him because, you know, four-star recruit coming into to Jim McElwain. You know, they're coming off of an era where Muschamp was the recruit and recruiting all kinds of heavy defensive players. And then McElwain comes in and he's recruiting a lot of these gadget players kind of on both sides of the ball, these tweener kind of players. Gardner Johnson comes in. He's a four-star. He's an extremely athletic defensive back. They use him as a returner and as a tackler on special teams early on in his true freshman year. And then by the end of the season, this guy is so athletic and their safeties were terrible that they put him in as a freshman. He ended up getting two interceptions in the bowl game, the Outback Bowl that year. Comes into his sophomore year and they're thinking, okay, here's this corner piece guy, okay? And Jim McElwain, let me tell you, Jim McElwain's entire staff did not know what they're doing. At all. Like, had no idea. It was the worst coaching staff in college football. They never taught a single player a goddamn thing.
I mean, look at every single player on the team.
Look
basically
at Ja'Kai Polite, for example. Yeah. Like, no one even knew who Ja'Kai Polite was last year. You know why? Because Jim McElwain's an idiot. So they had nobody on staff that could even teach these guys how to improve as football players. And so because of that, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson came out his sophomore year in 2017. Was the vocal leader. He's an aggressive dude.
He's a vocal leader. Oh, I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, he's like a hype dude. He'll yell at you. He'll what am I trying to say here? He's, I guess, like
the communicator.
He's a crap talker.
He plays that role. Like, he moves around, so he has to be
like all that kind of stuff. And he was just like, all right, this is me. This is my defense. Whatever. And he was reckless. They didn't teach him a damn thing. And so he just thought that he had this elevated role and played completely reckless. In 2017, it was awful. 2018, they get a new coaching staff. Dan Mullen gets in, Todd Grantham gets in there, and he actually looks like a defensive player. I think in man coverage he improved so much this season, and Florida used him as that quote-unquote star position, which is almost like what a big nickel would be in the NFL, where you're using like a safety as a nickel player. And you and I have talked about this before, and we think that that's probably his best area in the NFL. I think that he has the size. He's about 5'11", 6 foot, probably in between there, probably closer to 5'11", because we know schools lie. And he's about 205, 210, right. Floats in between there. But physical guy, athletic guy, he's a guy who can take away certain mismatches, and I think that's where his best place is in the NFL. Again, just like Rashawn Gary, if you can get a defensive mind that knows what he's doing, can know how to play him, then you can play a guy like as long as you can teach him a lot more technique that he currently doesn't have, then you can develop this guy into a guy that goes, okay, hey, this team's bringing in this kind of tight end this week. We need you to neutralize him. Play man coverage on him whenever he's in the slot. John, mm-hmm. And you can go, okay, there's a neutralizing kind of a player. And so that's what I see with him. But he is still certainly a raw dude.
That's exactly why he'll be so coveted, because there are not many players with the size, like you said, probably 5'11", 6 foot, very almost in terms of versatility, he's bigger than LaMarcus Joyner, but kind of some similarities to LaMarcus Joyner in terms of that versatility. Could play safety easily.
There,
could play free safety, could play in the box, can play in the slot, can match up with bigger players. Only he has size. Obviously, Joyner, you know, I think a better tackler and more reliable player, but you know, I think he has that to be able to match up with bigger players in the slot if you need to. You can play him deep if you need to. He can also mirror and match quicker slots. I think he's that quick and kind of fluid, just really oily hips, as Mike Mayock would say. And you know, I love his fluidity in short areas. I think that, you know, even when I watched him last year, as hard as the tape was to watch, I just kept saying to myself, I was like, if the light comes off, if he can cut some of this stuff out.
You were probably so frustrated at him because of that.
It was a situation for me where I was like, here's what, I know that there's talent here, but if he is like this again this year, no one will put him on the field in the NFL. There is a baseline of physicality you have to show in the NFL that he wasn't even close to showing in 2017, but that he's absolutely shown in 2018, even with some of the moments on tape that still make you want to pull your hair out as a tackler and as a finisher and, you know, just in his angles and everything. I think that's still clearly there with him. I mean, the dude had 9 tackles for loss. He was disruptive. He read things. He was explosive in his attacks.
Has interceptions,
you know,
every single year.
Right. Every
has
single
tackles
year
for loss. Has sacks.
Bit. Yeah.
Has pass breakups. Right. He's got the stats, man.
Yeah, he's got numbers you want to see. Obviously, I mean, only two passes defense this year. I think both of them were interceptions. So I mean, but at the same time, like, I saw him shut down throwing windows in man coverage this season. I thought he was really impressive this year. Yes, there's still some issues that are somewhat concerning. But I think he'll test well. I think he's versatile. I think he can play a bunch of different roles. He's not going to be a round one pick, I don't think. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's a round two pick. I mean, I think honestly, it would not surprise me if he's a round two pick. And it's funny because out of these guys, I mean, like, everybody's been talking about the rest of these guys that declared, right? Like, for months now. Nobody's talked about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. You know, everybody's looking at these. Oh, Rashawn Gary declared? Sure, for sure. You know, and Kill Harry declared. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He's this guy with 3 names that declared, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. For him to kind of just come out and declare right away, I think he's heard some good things back from the advisory.
That's something that I've talked about with, you know, some people who cover Florida and who are fans of Florida who were talking about this when the news came out. And I'm like, he doesn't, because somebody asked me, they're like, is he a day two pick? And I'm like, and I said basically the same thing to him. 2017 tape was god awful. 2018's tape was a lot better. And the more the 2018 tape went on, the better he looked. Like, right. That Florida State game at the very end, I get this, Florida State, they're not good, but like, he's a blanket. Nobody even gets open against him.
Right.
At least from what I saw. I haven't seen the all 22 yet, but I know that
he's got to watch the tape. Shout out Hugh.
This is true. Every time they threw the ball to him, I mean, it was nothing there at all. And so that's very good. And that I'm with you. You don't declare this early.
Right.
Unless somebody in the NFL has told you you're going top 75.
Right.
You know.
Yep, absolutely. Gardner-Johnson on fire right now, guys. Speaking of that, this episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Perfect for any friend or family on your holiday gift list. Great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders, or anybody that loves the outdoors or hates being cold. We all know people like that. I know my wife would appreciate some Action Heat clothing this Christmas season. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heating jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat, and it's available in men's and women's with new styles and models just released for this winter season. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon, actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Quickly before we wrap up, Trevor, looking at this Senior Bowl tracker list, that we've got 29 players. have accepted invitations to the Senior Bowl so far. Two guys that stand out to you that you can't wait to see in Mobile.
Josh Allen.
Okay.
Not the quarterback.
Correct.
And Monty Arawarie. Okay. Those are my two.
Those are probably your favorite guys, actually, on this list.
Because there are a couple other guys that I'm looking forward to. Like, for example, like Rocky Sin, I'm really looking forward to see him. But those two guys have the most implication if they have good weeks. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, Greedy Williams at corner, we know he's probably going to be the top guy. But, like, who's next? You know, we're always looking for that next shutdown corner. Could it be Arawarie? You know, he's got a chance to. We know the pass rushers are huge. It's going to be a big pass rushing class. Can Josh Allen truly overtake a couple of those guys? Maybe jump into the top 20. Who knows? Senior Bowl's a really good place for something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. My two guys, I'm going to pick two safeties, actually, for this. Nasir Adderley from Delaware. I don't even know if I'm saying his first name right. But Dane Brugler's talked him up a ton to me. I think he has him as one of the top safety prospects in the class. I've only seen a tiny bit, so I'm going to obviously see more of him before we get to the Senior Bowl, but for now, I'm excited about Adderley. I'm excited about what he brings to the table and what Dane's talked about him bringing to the table, and I just want to see him. I want to see him against a better level of competition. I think it's huge for a guy like that to be exposed lots of one-on-ones. I think you're going to see him at corner, I'm sure. You're going to see him at safety because he does play in the nickel a lot. Could be somewhat of a similar role to what we're just talking about with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. And so I'm excited to see Adderley. And then Jonathan Abraham from Mississippi State. Big, rangy, super physical, like open hand punch A.J. Brown in the face during their last game against Ole Miss. Should have got tossed from the game.
Dude, yeah. Okay. So you remember this summer during the supplemental draft when we were looking at Brandon Bryant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was watching Brandon Bryant tape to talk about him in the supplemental draft, Abrams kept popping out.
Well, he was the reason that Brian didn't play as much. Brian was kind of benched as that year went on. They were playing some three safety looks, but it's because Abram was coming on as much as he was. But the thing is with Abram, the thing is he blows coverages too, and he really just has a complete lack of instincts and ball skills in man coverage. He's in position a lot of time and just not really a natural kind of sense of finding the ball. But the man plays so hard and so physical, and he's big and he's fast. I think he's going to test pretty well. So can those other aspects of his game really be developed? Are they just not there? You know, he's going to look so good on the hoof to teams. I don't know about you're talking first round, but I think second round teams are going to kind of like it. Honestly, it's somewhat similar to Justin Evans, although I thought Justin Evans' peaks were more exciting than Jonathan Abram's peaks in college. But kind of the set where Abram missed so many tackles last year, man. I mean, like a ton of tackles. This year he's cleaned that up a lot, but still kind of the, you know, just what are you doing type of plays with him that happen from time to time, and very emotional player. So I'm excited to see him in Mobile and see how he does. Hopefully he gets put in some tough situations. I think it's a good space to be able to evaluate defensive backs, I think, in Mobile. We've kind of seen guys get exposed and receivers get exposed as well. So those one-on-ones are definitely a good opportunity to be able to evaluate some of those guys. So there you have it. A couple of guys that are on the top of our list for the Senior Bowl that we're excited to watch and excited to see. Tomorrow we talk about what should be a very fun weekend in college football. We evaluate kind of how those games go and prospects to watch. And then Thursday we'll move on to the NFL games before Super Show Friday with Cal Krabs and Joe Marino that we are very much looking forward to. Until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.